today's shiur is Masechta Baba Kama Daf Samach Beis. We will begin on Daf Samach Aleph Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom, Tana Rabbanan. As we have been learning in the previous shiurim, there's a machloitis between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim on what is the din regarding Taman Be'esh. If something is concealed, there's a stack of grain, but the stack of grain is concealing something, are you chayef for that concealed item or not? Rabbi Yehuda says, we are chayef for Taman Be'esh. The Rabbanan hold that you're not chayef for Taman Be'esh. Says the Braisa, Tan Rabbanan hamadlik sagodesh v'hoi bo kelim v'dolku. If somebody lights fire to a stack of grain, and there were kelim that got burned together with the grain. Rabbi Yehuda, oimer, misham kol ma'ashay v'toichay, Rabbi Yehuda follows his opinion that you chayef for Taman. V'cham oimerim, ein mishalom, el gdosh shel chitim, el gdosh shel sarim. You're only responsible for the grain. However, say the Chachamim, v'rayim makim ki'ilu hu molei tfua. Even though the Rabbanan are taking this lenient position and saying that you're not chayef for Taman, the Rabbanan do agree that we don't consider that area where these kelim are as if it's completely empty. Rather, we look at that area as if that area has in it the tefuah. That means, let's say there was a garment in this stack of grain. Clearly, a situation of tamun. So the Rabbanan will hold, you will not pay the value of the garment that got burnt, but you will pay as if it was full of tefuah, and the difference between, the only thing that you'll save is the difference in value between a garment and tefuah. However, the Mefarshim try to understand this din. If we've been learning that the opinion of the Rabbanan is that we're potter on Taman, so what's the so why are you chayif for this item, any amount, isn't it Taman? Explains the Chazon Ish. He says that the exemption for Taman does not apply when the presence of a hidden item is obvious. For example, he says, let's understand, if there's an entire wheat stack, even though the wheat at the bottom of the pile is not exposed, since it's obvious that there's wheat there, the Bala Eish, the Mazik, will be chayiv to pay for that wheat. He says, so therefore, in our case, it's safe to assume that the entire stack was full of wheat, and therefore, even though he doesn't have to assume, and since he doesn't have to assume, he cannot be held responsible for the garment that's there, he will be held responsible for the wheat that's there. The Chazon Ish is similar to the Chazon Ish that we discussed in the previous year, where if something is expected to be there, that's not considered Taman. That's how the Chazon Ish explained what we learned in the Mishnah at the end of the previous year, that the Mishnah says that all the contents of a house are not considered Taman. Says the Gemara, however, b'medvar mamurim, when do Chachamim say that we don't, you're not chai for Taman, b'mavik b'tar shaloi, v'holch v'dolk v'tar shal chaveroi, when he lights the fire in his own property and it spreads into someone else's property. Av mavik b'tar shal chaveroi, but if he lit the fire in somebody else's property, there the Rabbanan will agree that he's chayiv for Taman. On the other hand, says the Gemara, Umayd Rabbi Yehuda l'chachamim, even though Rabbi Yehuda, as we've been learning, holds that you are chayiv for Taman, there are times where Rabbi Yehuda will say that you're not chayiv. One such circumstance is b'mashal makom l'chaveroi l'hagdish kodesh. Somebody gave permission for someone else to put grain in his field, for Higdish for Hitman. And this person, instead of just putting grain there, also put something else into that stack. The here of Yehuda will agree, She'ena Mishalem Eldamei Godesh Bulvad, that the owner of the field will only have to pay the value for Godesh. And as the Rishonim explained, since he only accepted upon himself the Shmira of Godesh, he did not accept on himself the Shmira of any other item, he will not be Chayiv for those other items. Even, explains the Meiri, if it was an item that could be expected to be put into this type of a pile. Since he didn't accept upon himself that Shmira, he will not be Chayiv. Now the Gemara goes and quotes four more cases where Rabbi Yehuda will agree that the Baal HaEish is not Chayiv. The first case, L'hagdish Chitim V'higdish Soirim. Somebody was given permission to put Chitim into a field, but instead of putting Chitim, he only put in Soirim. So the halacha, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, is that it only pays Soirim. Ask the Rishonim, of course he'll only pay Soirim. That's all he did damage. We don't find in halacha that somebody should have to pay for anything more that he did. Why would we think that he's chayiv? Answer the Rishonim. That's referring to a situation that the person put kalim into this stack. And we would think that even though we just learned in the previous piece of Gemara that you're not chayiv for kalim because that wasn't what I accepted Shmira. However, here, since I did give this person permission to put in chitim, so I should be more liable, and therefore, let's say in this pile of soirim, he put a keli, which is maybe more expensive than certainly more expensive than soirim, and even more expensive than chitim, so I should look at that space as if it's full of chitim, the place that the Kaylee took up, and I should at least pay for that area the value of Chitim, which is greater than the value of Soirim. Teaches us the Braisa, since I now see that you put in Soirim instead of Chitim, my assumption is that this entire pile is only Soirim, and I only have to pay Soirim, even according to Yehuda. The next case was Chitim v'chipam b'Soirim. I gave you permission to put in I gave you permission to put in Soirim, but you instead put in Chitim. So again, since I didn't give you permission, did not accept responsibility for Chitim, therefore he's not Chayiv if he put in anything, if he put in Chitim instead of Soirim. Chitim in a case. Now, before we go further, Taisus makes a very important comment, and he says that in a case where I gave you permission to put in Soirim and you put in Chitim, I'm only held responsible for Soirim, is in a case, says Taisus, where the fire was lit in my property. However, says Taisus, if the fire was lit in someone else's property, was lit, spread from my property, it was lit in your property, it was lit in somebody else's property, I will have a higher level of responsibility. And there's a machlokes ha'achronim, how to understand Tosfos' opinion. The Maram explains it quite simply. He says that since in a case where I lit a fire in my property and it spread to somebody else's property, my knowledge of what really was there or wasn't there is limited. But in a case where I lit the fire in someone else's property, so I saw what I'm burning. And therefore, since I actually saw what I'm burning, my level of responsibility is greater. The Mashah explains it differently. And it's really based on a Gemara we're soon going to learn. The Mashah says there's a difference between a mazik and someone who's not a proper shomer. Pshia b'shmira. Our case, says the Mashah, where somebody went, the case that Tosfos refers to, where somebody went to somebody else's property and lit a fire there, is really a situation of lack of proper shmira. And really a case of mazik, I'm sorry. And since it's a case of mazik, the halacha will be that you have to pay for the chitin, even if you only expected soil. continues in the Braisa. The third case is chitin v'chipan b'sayrin. If there were chitin, and he accepted upon himself the shmir of chitin, but he covered those chitin with sa'irim. Or the next case, sa'irim v'chita b'chitin, there was actually barley, but he covered the barley with wheat, and he only accepted upon himself the shmira of sa'irim. That in all these cases, even Rabbi Yehuda will agree, Shadim Shalom El Dame Sairin Ovad. And as Mefarshim say, that in the previous case, since he saw an outer layer of barley, he assumed that the entire pile consisted of barley. Ask the Rishonim, if we're following here the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda is that somebody is chayif for Taman. So why is this worse than the case of Taman, that he should be chayif for it? Answer the Rishonim. There's a difference between when some, it's similar to Tosfos, what answers. When somebody lights a fire, and the fire goes and is mazik in somebody else's rishus, so Yehuda says, part of his responsibility as the Bala Eish is that he's chayiv for whatever damage the Eish did, even to things that were concealed. But here, says the Ramban, he's lighting a fire in his own property. And therefore, the level, it's entirely a different din. It's not really a din of mazik, as we've been speaking. It's more a din of not being a proper shomer. And therefore, if I assumed that I was watching Sairim, because this entire pile was covered with Sairim, and I'm being looked at as a shomer, I will maybe didn't do my job properly, I will be chayiv only for Sairim, not for chit. Says the Gemara, Amarava, Hanoisin din azov l'isha. If somebody gives a gold coin to a woman, and as all the Rishonim point out, this din is not specifically to a woman. The same din would be by a man. Just typically, we find in the Gemara that women were the ones that got coins. By Kedushin, the husband gives the wife a coin, so that's why our Gemara uses Hanoisin din azov l'isha. In fact, when this din is mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, it is mentioned as somebody giving a man a coin. Vamala, but he tells the woman as he gives her the coin, his hariba shakesafu. Be careful with this coin, because watch the coin, because it's silver. His ikasai. If she went and deliberately damaged it, she went and she threw that coin into the sea, the loch is mishalem dinazov. She has to pay the value of a dinazov. Mishum da amala, because the person who gave it a coin tells her, "My havloch gabei de zikti. What was this coin bothering you that you were mazikit?" And therefore, she's held responsible for the value, full value of the coin. And as Tosfos explains this Gemara, that Tosfos approaches, since it's not so uncommon for one to misrepresent the nature of his gold coin, because he realizes that his friend may refuse to accept the responsibility to guard the coin, knowing that it's gold. Therefore, the woman should have assumed that possibly it's a gold coin, and therefore she's chayiv for the value of the coin. But according to Tosfos, if an item turns out to be something entirely unexpected, so then, according to Tosfos, the mazik would not be obligated to pay its full value. Just like, says Tosfos, somebody who lights a fire does not have to pay for a purse concealed in a wheat stack, because according to Rabbanan, we don't have to assume that there's a coin there. The Rashba, and this is actually the opinion of most Rishonim, however, takes an entirely different approach, which is the approach that we've been trying to work with in this entire shiur. He says, there's a difference between when somebody damages b'yadayim. He does an outright damage. There he's responsible to pay no matter what, even if it's something that was entirely unpredictable. only in a case where the damage occurred somewhat indirectly, like the case where somebody lit a fire and the fire spread, that's when there's a difference between something that's exposed, concealed, expected, or unexpected. But here, because there it's a din more towards Shmira, here it's a din of a mamish amazik, and the halacha is that someone who's mamish amazik is chayiv under all circumstances. However, the Mefarshim ask a different question. If this man who gave it a coin represented the coin to be a silver coin, and actually it turned out to be a gold coin, why isn't this considered a mekechtos? She would have never perhaps accepted the shmira of a gold coin. Answer the Mefarshim. When do we say the concept of mekechtos? We say the concept of mekechtos, they explain, in a situation where someone, we had the other day, I assumed I was watching a shor tam, and actually I was watching a shor muad. So there, the animal I took is an, I assumed I was taking an animal that requires less of a shmira, and I ended up with an animal that requires greater shmira. And if I would have known that that's what I was getting into, I would have never agreed to get into such a situation. Here, watching a silver coin and watching a gold coin, maybe watching a gold coin requires me to have a better lock, a better security system. But it isn't inherently a different item that causes more and difficult work versus the silver coin versus the gold coin. And therefore, it cannot be considered a mekechtos. And I saw a very interesting shaila along these lines. The question that came up was, where one neighbor approaches the other neighbor and says to him, I'm going away and I have a bag of gold, could you watch the gold for me? And he says to him, I'm going to pay you for the services. So the neighbor becomes a shaymasachar. Then that gold that the neighbor is watching is stolen. And as we discussed earlier in this parak, a shaymasachar is chayiv for gneiva v'aveda. So the person who owns the gold comes back and says, you have to pay me for the gold that got stolen. You're a shaymer chinam. You're a shaymasachar. The neighbor then discovers that the gold that he was watching was actually illegal gold. It was gold that he didn't pay taxes on, it was stolen, whatever. Gold that he had no right to have in his property. So the neighbor says, the shomer says, it was a mekechtos. If I would have known that this gold was illegal, I would have never accepted the shmira of the gold. What is the halacha? So some paiskim, the Machna Ephraim, says that he's still chayiv. It's similar to our case. It's like that he got a silver coin instead of he got a gold coin instead of a silver coin. That doesn't, as we just learned, create a situation that he's not considered a shomer, that he's not considered a shomer that he could claim mekechtos. However, the Marik and other paiskim say that he could claim that this entire thing, this entire shmira, was a mekechtos. He could say, I would have never agreed to have in my property something that's illegal to have. It's similar to, I would have never agreed to take a shor mu'ud into my property. I only accepted shmira because I thought it was a shor tam. And therefore, the Marik says, the shay mesachar could say it was a mekechtos, and even though there was a shay mesachar, and he's normally chayif for geneva v'aveda, here he would be potter for the geneva. However, continues the Gemara, Poshaba, not that she actually went and was mazik the item, but what she did was she just did not watch it properly. And again, we're following the Rashba's explanation. There's a difference between doing a mazik biyodayim versus not doing a proper shmira. There aloch is mishalem mishal kesef. She will only have to pay the value of a silver coin. Damrla. Because she could say to him, Niturasa the Kesef Kabila Lai, I only accepted the Shmira of a silver item, I never accepted myself the shmira of a gold coin, and therefore this, I never accepted this responsibility, and I should not be held responsible for it. Amalei Rav Matchil Rav Ashi, Atem b'de Rava Mesnisulon. You learned this din in the name of Rava. Anan Mesnisa Pshitulon. I know this din from what we learned in the Brice that we spoke about earlier. The Brice said, Chitan v'chipman b'sayrim, if he piled up wheat, and he had a right to pile up wheat, but he covered it with barley, or it was sayrim. He had barley, which he was given permission to have, v'chipman b'chitan, but he covered it with wheat. Einem sham al demei sayrim b'vad. Even Rabbi Yehuda agreed that you only pay for the demei sayrim. Am amalei. Why? Is he only chayif for demei sayrim? Because the Shomer could say, Netirusa de Sa'ari kibilalai, I only accepted upon myself the Shmira for barley, not for anything else. Hachanami, in this case also, the woman could say, Amrle, Netirusa de Ahavala kibilalai, I never accepted upon myself to watch gold coins, and therefore I ought not to be responsible for that. Amarav. Shmam Misl Rabbi Yehuda, I heard something from Rabbi Yehuda, v'lo yidana mayhi, but I don't know what I heard. I forgot the exact details of what I heard. Om Shmu, v'lo yada Abba Mashmile, do you not remember? You used to call him Abba as a title of honor. Don't you remember? Rabbi Yehuda the Mechayev al Niske Tomim Beish. Rabbi Yehuda who's been taking the opinion that Yechayev when something is, even for something that's concealed. The halach is also takonas nigzal be'ishay. And just as a way of introduction, many times in our different sugyas that we've learned the halacha of shvua, that somebody has to make a shvua to fulfill his obligation. Now, typically, the case of a shvua is if somebody comes to me and says to me, I owe him money, and let's say he brings an echod that I owe money. The halacha is that I have to make a shvua that I don't own the money and I won't have to pay. Here we find something different. Here we find by nigzal that if Reuven stole something from Shimon, Shimon tells Reuven, and we know that Reuven is the gazlan. What you stole from me so much and so much, the halacha is that Shimon makes a shvua that that's exactly what was stolen, nishba v'noitel. It's a special din that was made, unlike normally that the halacha is nishba v'einem mishalim, here the halacha is nishba v'noitel. And as the Rishonim explained, the reason is fairly simple. Somebody who steals is not really expected to know the value and the extent of what he's stolen. And that's why the nigzal has a higher level of namonis than the gazlan. In fact, there's a machlokes rishonim, what will be the din where the gazlan, it says clearly and definitively that what was stolen from him, he does know exactly what he stole. Will still there be a din of nishba v'noitel? The Ravid, and this is very much consistent with the Ravid's opinion, says that there we won't say the halacha is nishba v'noitel. Because according to the Ravid, the whole reason why we say nishba v'noitel is only because the gazlan is not expected to know exactly what he stole. And that's why the nigzal has a higher level of nemonis. But here where the gazlan is saying clearly, this is what I took, nothing else, he is nemon. The Rashba disagrees with the Ravid, and he says that even if the Gazlan says that this is what I took, he knows for sure what he took, and not something else, the Nigzel is still Neman. And the Rashba explains, because this is a special din that we gave this power to the Nigzel, and once Chazal gave this power to the Nigzel, it's under all circumstances, no matter what the Gazlan is claiming. So Al Gemara now begins to ask the question, this special din of Nishba V'Noitel, was it also said regarding the situation of a fire, where somebody lit a fire and it spread into someone else's property and did damage. So the situation is extremely similar, that the person lighting the fire is not really know what is doing in someone else's property. And therefore, the question is, can the damaged victim just make a shvur while it was burnt and be neman? And the Rishonim point out, this question, why is it being specifically posed according to Rabbi Yehuda? The same question could be posed according to the Rabbanim. So some Rishonim say that the reason it's being posed according to Rabbi Yehuda is simply because the Gemara wants to show us that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Others explain the question is a much stronger question according to Rabbi Yehuda, because the question Rabbi Yehuda says that yechayiv even for tamon. So we would think that when something went into someone else's property and it did damage to something that's tamon. Now, Tamil, we said, is something that's concealed and unexpected. The wallet that's high, that's concealed in the stack of wheat. Maybe you should not be chayiv. So the Gemara is trying to show us that you chayiv, that nishba v'naitel, even for something that's tamen. It's a much more powerful lesson. Ask the Gemara. Bayameima, also takaras nigzel b'mosr aloy. A muster is somebody who informs on someone else, and because of that, the other person ends up with a loss. Is that the same din apply regarding a muster, that if the person who suffered damage could, because of this mesira, to make a shvur v'naitel? And again, the Yamsha Shlomo points out that certainly in a case where the damage was direct, that the muster, so to speak, gave over the item that belongs to the victim to the authorities, because this would not be considered a situation, there would be no shaila that he's considered a mazik and he's chayiv. Here it's only sort of an indirect situation. Again, we have a similar machloikus rishonim. What are the circumstances? What is the muster saying here? Is it referring to a case that the muster is denying, and still the Gemara is questioning perhaps the din is nishba v'naitel? Or some Rishonim say that if the muster clearly denies that it was his fault that this happened, he will not be chayiv. It's only in the circumstances of the Gemara where such a claim cannot be, where the victim claims that he was damaged and the muster does not definitively disagree. Says the Gemara, Aliva the man d'om aloy deinin and deinin d'gami. According to the man d'om that says that we don't consider garmi an action that I've done, loy tibay loch the mesaris nael midoy deinin. We're going to learn in Mitzvah Shem the concept of garmi. We have already encountered the concept of groma, and in fact, there are rishonim that say groma and garmi are really one and the same, and both of them are a situation where it wasn't direct my damage, it was only sort of indirect. And Grummer and Gami are not considered an actual situation of Masik because it wasn't direct. Others say that Garmi and Grummer are not exactly the same. And they say that that even though Grummer ben Nezakim is Potter, Garmi is Chayif. They say the difference between Garmi and Grummer is that there's more of a delay, or it's more indirect by groma than by garmi. So Mesiris is certainly not considered direct. It's only sort of indirect. So the question, says the Gemara, according to the man the Omer that says that if somebody did a garmi, it's not considered that he did it Maisa Hezek. There's no question that a Mesiris is not considered a Mazik, and there is no room for a shvua that it should be nishba v'naitel. Elakit b'aylach, the entire question that the Gemara is posing is a leave of the man d'omer dainin and dina d'gami, that gami is considered a maisa mazik. And now that we have established that's considered a ma'isa mazik, the Gemara's question is, also takonas nigzla masa? Did they make this same takona that the victim makes a shvua nizve v'noitel, the mishtava v'shokol, or loy? The Gemara says teku, it remains a question. It's interesting that there's a machlok for Rishonim how to view these tekus. Some Rishonim say that the halach of teku would teach us that amoytz mechavera all of a raya, like throughout we've learned that halacha. Others say that when we have in our Gemara and these types of dinim mominus, the psak of teku, what the Gemara means to say is that it's momen amutal b'sofik, we have here a sofik, and cholkim, the money is divided. Says the Gemara, who gavish the batas b'kaspis of the chavre. There was a certain person who kicked the money backs of his fellow. Shadja bin Nahara, and he went and he threw it into the river. I had this much in that box. So Rav Ashi was trying to understand what should be the halacha here. Isn't this the situation that we learned in our Mishnah? That now we learned in our Mishnah, that if somebody ignited, set fire to a house, so here too, isn't this considered something that he should be chayav for? Omle, says the Gemara, if he was claiming that there was money in the money box, the victim was certainly believed. However, here is a situation where he's claiming there was jewelry in the box. Is jewelry something that's typically left in the money box, and therefore he's neman, or he's not neman? And here we have a machlokes, Tosfos and the Rashba. Tosfos says that the Gemara's question is even in a situation that there were edim, that there were jewels in this money box, and the Gemara's question still is, could the Mazik claim that he had no reason to believe that there is money, that there were jewels in the jewelry box? The Rashba, however, says that it's only in a case where we don't have definitive edim saying that there was jewelry in the box. But if there are edim that there was jewelry in the box, there would be no question that the person who threw that into the box into the yam would be chayiv. And the Rashba is really following his opinion that he's been speaking about the entire shir. Because the Rashba is saying that this is a situation of mazik biyodayim. And the Rashba holds that whenever you have a mazik biyodayim, whether it's something to be expected or not expected, the person who was mazik biyodayim is chayiv. Tosfos doesn't have such a strong opinion regarding the mazik biyodayim, and therefore Tosfos says that if it's a case that we know there was jewelry in the box, it would be the same. Teku, and the question remains. Amle Rav Yemel Rav Ashi, Ton Kasa de Kasper Bebir Amai. Somebody caused somebody else's house to burn down, and the victim says, I had in my house a silver cup. I guess it wasn't so common then to have silver cups in people's house. Amale. So what do? Do we believe the victim or not? Says the Gemara again, Chazina. E inish amarhu. If the person's a wealthy person, this like Kasa de Kaspa, that he's the kind of person that would have a silver cup, inami inish mahemnahu, or he's a very reliable person, the mafkadei inish gabei, people leave expensive items by him to watch, so then mishtabe v'shokel, he makes the shvua, nishbe v'naitel, v'laf, otherwise kol kminei, he's not believed. It's interesting that based on the Gemaras that we've learned in today's shir, I saw from Rabbi Yaakov Blau that he Paskin's an interesting shaila that came up in the Sefer Pesachei Choshen. He says there were two neighbors, Reuven and Shimon was leaving for an extended period. So he asked Reuven to please check up on his house, come in on a regular basis to see that everything in his house is fine. And Shimon does it, and Shimon comes to the house and he sees that Reuven's freezer is running and there's nothing in the freezer. The freezer's empty. He says, this is a terrible waste of electricity, and he unplugs the freezer. Comes back again a couple of days later to again check on what's doing in the house, and he see there's a terrible smell. He discovers the source of the smell was that there was actually one chicken left in the freezer, which spoiled. He went and took that chicken and threw it in the garbage. Shimon comes home, and he says, what happened here? He says, well, I unplugged the freezer because I wanted to save you money. Then I discovered the chicken. It got spoiled, and I threw it out. And Shimon says, do you know what you did to me? I had hidden a tremendous amount of money in that chicken, and you threw out that money. What is the din? Say to Paiskim, says Rav Lau, based on today's shir. He says, as the Rashi has been telling us, there's a difference between somebody who's a mazik biyadayim and someone who's not a mazik biyadayim. This person is clearly not a mazik biyadayim. A mazik biyadayim is somebody who intended to do damage. This person didn't intend to do damage. On the contrary, he intended to do something nice. Furthermore, just based on the Gemara that we just learned, one isn't expected to assume that there's money in a chicken. So, as our Gemara just said, one of the considerations taken is do we assume that this person would have a silver cup in his house or not? Here, clearly, nobody assumes that there's money in a chicken, and therefore, the person who threw out the chicken would not be held responsible. Says the Gemara. We find in the Torah two different words that speak about a gazlan, someone who steals. Gazlan and chamsan. Amle Rav Adab Reide Rav Avya l'Rav Ashi. Ma ben gazlan and chamsan. What is the difference between a gazlan and a chamsan? Amle, chamsan yavdami. Chamsan is somebody who pays for the object he's taken. Gazlan lo yavdami. Gazlan doesn't pay. Ask the Pnei Yeshua. Although this is a very important question, how does this come into our sugya? Says the Pnei Yeshua. Our Gemara actually taught us a very important concept, and we actually alluded to this earlier in our shiur. Our Gemara taught us that Chazal made a gzeira, that by somebody who's a nigzal, somebody who's stolen from, the loch is nishba v'noitel. But our Gemara went and expanded on that din. And let's say it isn't only by somebody who is a nigzal. We said it's somebody who's the victim of a fire. Perhaps somebody who's the victim of mesira also are included in that category. So we see that gazlan has a very broad application. In fact, there are rishonim that suggest that by every situation of mazik, that loch is nishba v'noitel. It's machloikus rishonim. So gazlan now got a very broad application. So we need to know what is and what isn't in that category, which leads us to the question, what is the difference between a gazlan and a chamsan? The Gemara says the difference is one pays and one doesn't pay. Amalei, so he asked, E yov dame chamsan karislei. If the person paid, why is he called a chamsan? Vamrav Huna, Talu v'zavin, zvin ezivin. If somebody was forced into a sale, but he actually consummated the sale is considered halachically valid. So what? Why is he called the chamsan? Answers the Gemara, Lekasha, hada amaroitzani, hada loy amaroitzani. Even if somebody concluded the sale, if he did it under the duress and he did not agree, it's still considered a situation of chamsan. There's actually many different pshat in the Gemara. I'm going to learn the simplest way. That's the way the Michas Chinuch learns. And Taisu speaks about this. There's a din in the Torah, in the Seres Adibris actually, of like Sachmoid. You're not allowed to want or take something that belongs to someone else. So if the victim said, Roitzani, we don't have a situation of like Sachmoid being transgressed, and that's why the halacha is that the sale is a good sale, and it's not considered a chamsan. If, on the other hand, he did not say Roitzani, so the chamsan is being overlay sachmoid, and because he's being overlay sachmoid, it it nullifies the entire sale. Says the Mishnah, get shiyot metachsa patish. If somebody was banging with a hammer and a spark flew from that hammer, chayiv, the halach is the person who caused the spark to fly is chayiv. There's a three-way machlokes rishonim discussing what type of a mazik is this individual. Some rishonim say that it's considered a situation of eish, a spark is eish. Others say that's not really a situation of eish, it's actually a situation of mamon hamazik. My spark flew, so I am considered, it's considered like mamon hamazik. And a third opinion is that it's considered like Adam Hamazik, because it's directly because I caused that spark to fly. Continues the Mishnah. Gamal Shayutan Pishtin Vav Brishus Rabin. Somebody had a camel that was carrying linen and walking Shus Rabin. V'nichnas Pishtan L'Chanus. And his Pishtin went into the Chanus of somebody else. The tall of a big benerish l'chavanai, and it was ignited by the shopkeeper's lamp. They look a severe, and the entire store went on fire. The entire building, balgam l'chayiv, because he should not have loaded up his animal with such a load that would cause this fire. However, hiniyach chavani nerim b'chutz. If the shopkeeper left his lamp outside, then the chavani is chayiv. Says Rabbi Yehuda Omer, if the fire that was kept outside was a Ner Chanukah, then the halacha would be that he's potter. So the Rishonim explain what is the machlokes between Rabbi Hud and the Tanakama, that the Tanakama holds that he's still chayiv. Say the Rishonim that even though, as we're going to learn in the Gemara in a moment, that he had a right to put outside the Ner Chanukah to be mekayim the mitzvah, that still doesn't absolve him from watching the Ner Chanukah that he put outside. And since he put the Ner Chanukah outside and didn't watch it, he's chayiv. It's similar to Rishonim say to a din that we've discussed many times, that the halach is many times you're allowed to pour wastewater into the Rishus Rabbim. But even if you're allowed to pour that wastewater into the Rishus Rabbim, you're still held responsible if that wastewater does damage. Furthermore, says the Sfas Emes, that if, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you put out the Ner Chanukah, since you had a right to put it out, and it was burning past the shear that you have to let the Chanukah candles burn, you're still potter because it was put out b'rishus, it was put out for a Dvar Mitzvah. The Mefarshim go on to say, if the point of Rabbi Yehuda is to teach us that you're not chayiv because it's a Ner Chanukah, it's a mitzvah to put it out there, outdoors, why does it have to be stated specifically with the story of a storekeeper? So Mefarshim explained, the Chasam Sofer explains, that the Chiddush here is, why are you allowed to put the candle Ner Chanukah outside? Because you're supposed to put the Ner Chanukah outside for Pesumei Nisa. But maybe we would think that a storekeeper doesn't have to put the candle outside. There's plenty of Parsumei Nisa indoors because so many people enter a shop. Teaches us the Chasam Sofer that the Mishnah is teaching us that he has even the shopkeeper that has many people walking into the store still preferably has an obligation to put his Ner Chanukah outdoors, and therefore he's exempt if the gomel burnt his Ner Chanukah. The Sfas Emes also discusses that even though we're saying now that if he put the candle outside and it damaged the donkey, he's potter for the damage of that happens to the donkey. But on the other hand, let's say now the linen, the pishton that the camel was carrying ignites the store and the store gets damaged, that much we won't say, and he won't be able to collect damages. The owner of the store will not be able to collect damages from the owner of the camel. Amar Avinu Mishmei Durava. Shmei Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Ner Chanukah. Mitzvah L'nich B'toch HaSara. There's a mitzvah to put the Ner Chanukah within 10 tefachim of the ground. This Agdatach L'malam HaSara. If we're going to say that it could be put on top of only on top of 10 tefachim, Amai Amar Rabbi Yehuda Ner Chanukah Potter. What Rabbi Yehuda just teaches that the person who put out the Ner Chanukah is Potter. Leimalei, why shouldn't the damaged parties say to the shopkeeper, you should have put it higher up where somebody going on a camel would not get affected by the fire. There's a mitzvah to put it within 10 tefach. There's an interesting shaila. We who light candles indoors and people live in apartment houses and tall buildings, that certainly their apartment is above 10 tefachim from the ground. What is the din? Should you light the candle, since you're anyway lighting the candle above 10 tefachim, because your apartment is above 10 tefachim from the ground, should you light it within 10 tefachim of the floor of your apartment? And the Paiskin, the Mishnah Brura, say that l'chatchila, in the apartment, the candle should be lit within 10 tefachim. There's a beautiful Imri Emes. The Imri Emes explains, because usually the klal is that layor the Shechina has not descended lamatim asara. But Ner Chanukah, which represents the Shechina, we're saying the Shechina is all over amongst us, even lamatim asara. So the Gemara Amri Loi, Loilam Em Lachafila Malam Asara. You could actually put the Ner Chanukah above 10 tefachim. My Amrit, he should have put it up higher. Kivin the mitzvah ka'asik, he's doing a mitzvah, and kulachai lo yatzuchu rabbanan, they weren't particular that he should put it up that high. Amr Av Kahana, Darsh Rav Nosim Rav Menyuni Mishmei Deb Tanchem, Ner Chanukah shenich lamala mism amma, if someone put up a Ner Chanukah above 20 amma, taloch is psula, kasaki kumovi. That's already too tall, because it has to be a place where it could be seen. Doruch Hanan says, why are we saying Kisaku Kamavi? We just teach us one din. So the Hanan explains, because there are cases that a sukkah should be kept, can be made higher than 20 amma. A mavui can never be higher than 20 amma. So on one hand, we want to compare it to sukkah, to teach us that just like the sukkah cannot be higher than 20 amma, because you can't see the schach when it's that tall, so too the Ner Chanukah should not be higher. But it's also trying to teach us that the exemptions that apply to a sukkah don't apply to Ner Chanukah. Furthermore, the Farshim say that even though we're giving it, the Paiskim say that even though we're giving a special dispensation for Ner Chanukah to be left outdoors, even if it does damage, that dispensation wasn't given to a sukkah. If somebody puts a sukkah in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and it causes damage, he has no exemption. Furthermore, I saw that the Mefarshim explained what is the lesson of this Mishnah as we finish this pasuk. Here, somebody put out Ner Chanukah. He was doing a mitzvah. And from this mitzvah of putting out the Ner Chanukah, someone got damaged. So we would think this is a terrible situation, that a mitzvah caused damage for someone. Teaches us our Mishnah, we should never look at it that way. And a mitzvah never causes damage. And if, even though it looks to us as if someone was adversely affected, it should not be viewed that way. Rather, really, it was Gamzul Lataiva. Everything that a Kadosh Baruch Hu causes us to happen is L'taiva. Says the Mishnah, Merubah Midas Hadron Allah Chakoinis, Hadron Allah Chakoinis, Hadron Allah Chakoinis. Merubah Midas Tashlumi Kefil, Midas Tashlumi Abra Chamisha. A Ganav has to pay Kefil, as we discussed. If he steals a Shor or Seh, Daloch, and he shechts it or sells it, by Seh he has to pay four times the value, by a Shor he has to pay five times the value. Then more dinim by kefil than by arba v'chamisha. Shemitas tashlum kefil nahegis bein medav shesh barayu chayim bein medav shem baruch chayim. Whether it's something that's a living or not living. Umidas tashlum arba v'chamisha en nahegis el b'shar b'sab levad. Shnema ki yignav ish shar oiseh tfocha macharay. Only by shar and seh is there a din of dal v'hei. Furthermore, Ein aganef acha aganef mishalm tishlumei kefil. Somebody who steals from another ganef doesn't have to pay kefil. There's a machloikus achroinim. Does he have to pay for the keren? The tzoy says that he doesn't have to pay even the keren. The tumim disagrees and he says that he does have to pay kefil. And the nesiva says it depends. If the ganef minaganef actually used the item that he stole, then he'll have to pay for the keren. Otherwise, he won't have to pay keren. Furthermore, if somebody stole a ganef stole a shoraseh, and then somebody else went and shechted or sold it, doesn't have to pay the arba v'chamisha. And the reason is, two reasons the Rishonim give. One reason is it says gurim beisa ish, with the Torah that speaks about dal v'hei says gurim beisa ish, and we learn v'loim beisa ganef. Another explanation is, since as we just learned, he won't have to pay kefil, dal v'hei is on top of kefil. If there's no kefil, there's no dal v'hei. Says the Gemara, v'ilu, midas tashlim kefil nehegas bein beganef bein betoin tanis ganef, to tell us that if somebody was watching, Hashem Echinam, was watching an item, and then he says it was stolen, and actually it turns out that he was the one that stole it, that he pays kefil, that is the din by toyot haniskana. Umiz tashlumi abu chamisha ein nahegas el begana bavad loik tani. That din our Mishnah doesn't teach us. Says the Gemara, it seems that our Mishnah is corroborating the Sile of Chibar Abba, Dom Rav Chibar Abba Om Rav Yochanan, that Toin Tanis Gan of Bikodim. Somebody says that he was watching something and it was stolen. The Aloch is that he, and it turns out that he was actually the Ganef. The Aloch is Misham Tashlumi Kefil. And he also holds that if he actually was Tavach or Macher, if he sold it or shechted it, Misham Tashlumi Abba V'Chamisha. And therefore, this is not one of the differences between Kefil and Arba V'Chamisha, and therefore it's not mentioned in our Mishnah. Ikad Amri, Lame Messiah Le Rechibar Abba. Should we say that our Mishnah is a proof to Rechibar Abba? The Om Rechibar Abba, Om Rav Yoichanon, Hatoin Tanis Ganem B'Kodoin, Misham Tashlumi Kefil. Tavach Macher, Misham Tashlumi Abba V'Chamisha. Isn't our Mishnah corroborating that? Says the Gemara, Mik Tani Ein Bein. If our Mishnah was said Ein Bein, it would indicate that it's telling us all of the differences between Kefil and Dal V'Hei. Our Mishnah used somewhat of a not frequently used terminology, Merubik Tani. And when it uses the words Meruba, it's Tana V'Shayim. That there are other differences, the Mishnah isn't mentioning all of the differences. And it's actually a Machloikis Rishonim, how to understand what the Gemara means. Some say what the Gemara means is that Meruba doesn't have the same din as Ein Bein, and by Meruba the list doesn't have to be complete. Others say that there are, Taisa says, there are other differences that are not being mentioned in our Mishnah, and since they're not yet been mentioned in our Mishnah, the halach is Tan of Ishayer, the list doesn't have to be conclusive. However, the first pshat, the first version of the Gemara, Rishonim say, hold just the opposite. The Meruba means that the list is complete. And if the list is complete, and the Mishnah doesn't bring down the difference between a ganef and a Toin Tanis ganef regarding that Tficha Mechira, so it's a proof that even Toin Tanis ganef has to pay Dal V'Hei by Tficha Mechira.